Welcome back to Screenfish Radio. I'm so glad you could join us because I am here with Kevin McLenathan to talk about the Zone of Interest. Welcome back, Kevin.
Thanks. It's great to be back. I had a great time recording our top movie moments talk just now, and I'm looking forward to diving into the Zone of Interest.
It was a surprise to me that all three of your top movie moments came from the Marvels, but you know,
I was wondering if you were going to, you know, like give me a little tweak there.
I mean, you do you, but no, go back and listen to Kevin's picks and mine as well. But no, I'm really excited to talk about The Zone of Interest, which I thought is one of the more interesting films for 2023. I felt The Zone of Interest is directed by Jonathan Glazer and tells the true story of Rudolf Hess, a Nazi officer who is increasingly burdened by his work. Tasked with maintaining order within Auschwitz, Rudolf spends his days working with his staff and discussing the latest upgrades for their torturous facility. When his boss makes some changes to the structure of leadership, Rudolf is transferred, placing stress on his family relationships. As always, this podcast is rated S for spoilers, but Kevin, I have to know what you thought of Zone of Interest.
Man, I mean,
that sums it up.
I was haunted by it. This was one of my, like, this is one of my favorite films of the year. I think it's a tremendous piece of work. And I think one reason why it sticks with me is it's very, very disciplined about how it approaches the Holocaust. I feel like here in 2023, we've seen enough movies about the Holocaust that it's all too easy for us to sort of abstract them away. Like, oh, it's, you know, it's another movie about the Holocaust. And we think we know what to expect out of that kind of a story. We expect there will be atrocities. We expect for our perspective to be aligned with certain characters against certain characters. And we expect, again, to be reassured that we're on the right side of history. And that, you know, the bad guys are safely in the past. The Nazis were the Nazis, and we're not the Nazis. So that's good. You know, good job us for not being genocidal monsters. And I think the Zone of Interest really explodes that whole comfy approach to its subject matter by doing something really daring and making the Nazis the point of view characters, and essentially making it clear that, yeah, they weren't monsters. They might have been something worse. They were human beings. And what does it, like, how do we feel if we're told that the people who perpetrated these horrors weren't, you know, movie villains wearing black uniforms who speak in scary German voices and are kind of othered in that way? You know, what if they were just, you know, they had jobs to do and they did them because they really didn't care all that much to think very hard about what they were doing? And that's a tremendously disquieting tack for a movie to take. And it's exactly the sort of movie I feel like people need to see, especially, you know, here in now 2024, with kind of creepy, you know, fascism is not dead. It is very much alive. And we need to grapple with what it means for fascism to reassert itself in our lives here and now. And I think The Zone of Interest kind of challenges us to do that through its story of Rudolf Hess. I mean, it's like I said, it's a haunting work, and I thought it was very, very strong. What did you think?
Well, it's funny to hear your description of the film, because I just realized that behind me is a poster for Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. And yeah. You're absolutely right. Like, cartoon Nazis, they're the villains. They're easy to point out. There they are. I see them. This may be one of the most horrifying films I've seen in, you know, in a decade, quite frankly. It is the type of film that it's interesting, and I want to be careful how I say this. It's quite dull, but I don't mean that as a problem. I mean, the film is riveting, but it's like if you're watching it happen, it feels like I compared it in my review to The Office, because The Office as a series, as a comedy series, wanted to look at the normalcy of everyday life and its foibles and its comedic moments. But this takes the horrors of war, strips away all the sensational nature of it. There is no graphic nature of to this film. We hear the screams of Auschwitz. We don't see it. This is not a film that manipulates you visually. But as it unfolds, it becomes so unsettling, by how normal everything is. This is a man who goes to work. This is a man who struggles with his boss, and he doesn't really want to get transferred. And uh-oh, what's it going to do with my marriage? And his kids are playing in a pool, and oh yeah, don't go near the fence, but let's just stay here. It's absolutely compelling. But on the surface, when you're watching it play out, what's most terrifying is how normal it feels. I thought it was absolutely brilliant. It is a brilliant film. And to the fact that you and I can sit here and say it's 2024 and the Nazis aren't gone is just as horrifying. But there's something so brutally honest about this film, just based on its perspective, that I find it terrifying, more terrifying than any other film I can think of about the horrors of war, quite frankly. That's saying a lot. But war films are sort of the template for, what's the word, visual, I don't want to say manipulation, but visual, like, punctuation. It's like, I'm going to make this point by blowing the guy's arm off, or I'm going to make this point by showing you what went wrong. This film doesn't do that.
I mean, I think there's a word for that phenomenon that you're describing. I'm going to propose that kind of imagery can be pornographic. And by pornographic, I don't mean in the sense that it's often used to speak of sexual pornography. Lots of things can be pornographic without involving sex. Pornographic, like something is pornographic if it seeks to appeal to your base appetites, to titillate you, by showing you something that you really shouldn't be excited by, but you are anyway. And Holocaust movies can struggle with this because when you go to a Holocaust movie, there might be a part of you, a very dark, shameful part of you, that is kind of wondering, oh, what kind of atrocities am I going to get to see? It's a horrifying thought, but you can read conversations about movies like Schindler's List or Saving Private Ryan or any number of films where there's a lot of attention paid to just how gnarly the violence can get. And I'm not saying that liking those films makes you a lover of pornography. I'm saying that that's an impulse that needs to be guarded against, I guess, when we watch movies about these subjects. And the thing about the Zone of Interest is it steadfastly refuses to appeal to that kind of pornographic interest. It doesn't show very much, if any, on-screen violence at all. It's all oral. Like we hear it. We hear screams. We hear gunshots. There's always in the distance the light of the furnaces of Auschwitz. And so the audience knows what those things signify and knows that those atrocities are happening. Though, you know, Jonathan Glazer, the director, isn't pussyfooting around this at all. He's very clear about what's going on here, but he doesn't give us imagery that could slide too easily into that kind of baser appeal to instinct. And that, I think, is a really tough tightrope to walk. I think he accomplishes it with flying colors. And I think the film is almost more horrifying because of that, because your mind is filling in the gaps. You're not being sort of goosed by some horrifying imagery on screen. You're kind of forced to sit and imagine what's going on the other side of the wall, of that wall that separates Hesse's cozy suburban home from the most horrifying atrocities imaginable. You're forced to imagine them, and you kind of start to wonder why, what is it about Hesse and his family that they aren't constantly imagining it? What's wrong with them?
Yeah.
And then that might lead you to, what's wrong with people? What is wrong with us? And I think that's why it's so disturbing, is because Glazer's, he really kind of hits you below the belt and hits you where it hurts. He's like, he forces you to ask those questions rather than kind of hitting you with this shock and awe display of atrocity. That's incredible and disturbing and miraculous in some ways, a horrible miracle maybe.
The thing about this film that makes it so unique is that as they're staring out the window, the violence, the screams, is akin to the noisy neighbors. Like, he's annoyed at the noise next door. You know, and it's played in such a way, it's almost like, you know, I just want to go to bed. Just leave me alone. I'm just trying to get through my day. And we as the viewer are expecting, we're waiting for that graphic violence. You know, we've seen it before in other films, and there's a certain, in those moments in other films, there's a certain sense of us watching so that we can be horrified. Oh no, I can't believe that happened. We're sitting there sad that that took place. There's still that almost a distance. But this film doesn't let us off the hook. It puts the emphasis, like you said, on us. Why aren't we more upset? Why aren't we thinking about what's going on in the lives of the other people over that wall right now? What is the problem, and how did I help create it based on my action or inactivity? It's absolutely staggering. The shift of perspective in storytelling makes the film far darker in some ways, because we have to look at ourselves and look at the nature of evil per se. And all of a sudden, like you saying before, it's not someone else. It's all of us. It's not just, and it goes even far deeper than World War II and Auschwitz. It's us with our relationships now, the people with us across the street and across the aisle, politically or personally or racially, all of these things. The film actually demands us to ask those questions about ourselves, which I can't think of another film that does that way. Usually it's through shock and awe, but this is through the opposite of that.
I like how Glazer, he's very attentive to the rhythms of domestic life for Rudolf Hess. There's kind of, you know, the constant, you know, glow of the furnaces, and, you know, we hear what's going on the other side of the wall, even if we never see it. But the camera, for the most part, remains trained on, you know, Hess, he sits at his desk, he pushes paper, he writes letters, he dictates memos. His wife is obsessed with her garden. She takes a friend on a tour of the garden, sort of like Blas, you know, just pointing out the different kinds of flowers that she's gone to great effort in order to cultivate, you know, right up against the walls of Auschwitz. the matter of fact way that the discarded clothing of people who have been murdered in Auschwitz, the matter of fact way she kind of like brings those into her home and kind of lays them out on the table and tells the help, take what you want. They're not using it anymore. This it'll all go to waste unless you take it. She does it with the same kind of blasé attitude that you'd take for like dropping something off at Goodwill.
Yeah.
And that is disturbing and should disturb us. It kind of, you know, it points out that, you know, people can get used to anything if they let themselves. And the thing about the Nazis wasn't that they were like, there was something irredeemably broken in them that, you know, caused them to suddenly like turn into people who would be, you know, in support of genocide. They just sort of acclimated themselves by degrees to a society that would perpetrate these things. And, you know, like, what are you going to do? Stop doing your laundry? What are you going to do? Stop going to work? No, you gotta earn a paycheck. But also, your society is built on genocide. That's something that, you know, Glaser, he's not like advancing something that, you know, a point like telling the audience, you know, this is what you need to do. He's just forcing you to observe that fact and then ask you, well, what do you make of that? And we're kind of left to answer that question for ourselves, which I think shows a lot of trust in the audience, a lot of respect for the audience and a lot of trust in the audience on Glaser's part.
You know, it's interesting that one of the final moments of the film, and this was, I mentioned this in our movie moments episode, is Hess vomiting on the stairwell. Mm-hmm. And I thought about it and I thought, well, there's your exclamation point on the film. And if you take that out, if you take out that moment, the film offers no hope, but at least in this one moment, which is immediately removed, you know, it's like it's there and then it's not there. Because we know that didn't happen. You know, Hess didn't have a moment of regret. But by putting that in there, there's almost a sense that, you know, maybe there's hope for humanity. I think if you took that out there, the film would be far darker. Because without it, he's just going to keep going on about his day, and he's going to keep pushing that paper. And it's just one event after another, just, you know, sitting down with, you know, doing his podcast, if you will, or doing it, you know, doing like we're doing right now, just going through the everyday moments of his day. No, go ahead. Sorry.
I mean that I like that read. I think there's another way to read that too. Read that moment as well, where it's not so much a moment of hope as a further indictment of him saying like he does have a conscience. He isn't just kind of a, you know, a soulless monster. He is a human being with a conscience, and it did bother him, and it does bother him, and he pushes through that feeling to do what he did anyway. And the final shot of the film kind of shows him disappearing without giving away too much of the particulars of the shot, because I think it's a wonderful shot. He sort of recedes in a very specific way in the final shot of the film. And it's, without putting too fine a point on it, it's a descent. He descends into something. And I think Glaser is very intentionally saying, like, this man, he doesn't get, there is no redemption for him. And it's because he willfully went along with it rather than just sort of, you know, suddenly finding himself like, oh, whoops, I perpetrated genocide. Like, he made choices along the way to ignore the prodding of his conscience. And there's only one end point for a spiritual trajectory like that.
Yeah.
Which admittedly is very dark. It, yeah. You know, it is very dark and disquieting, but I think that's why I appreciate this film so much, is it is so unsparing in that moral vision. Yeah.
Well, here's a question. This is the most dangerous question I think I've asked on a podcast in a long time, but you're from Chicago, so I know you're tough. I know you can handle it.
City of the big shoulders.
That's right. Is Rudolf Hess a good man?
No. I mean, like that I think that's
Oh,
easy.
well, there we
No,
go.
he's
Okay,
not a
thank
good
God.
man. I don't think he's a good man. I
No.
think he is a man, though. He is not a monster. He is a human being. And I think that that's kind of what makes this film have that kind of edge of danger. Like you say, it is a dangerous question to try to humanize the Nazis, because it's the line between humanizing and excusing is very fine. It's difficult to walk, to not cross over to the wrong side of that, because when you say, oh, they're only human, it begins to sound like, well, everyone makes mistakes, and that's not okay.
Yeah.
I think with the zone of interest, Glazer is saying he's only human, and that should bother you. So that's my read on the question. I'm curious to know what your thoughts are, though.
Oh, well, I'm with you 100% on that, actually, because it's funny because you watch him in his daily existence and he's doing all the things like any other situation, any other character. You know, it feels like this is the guy you'd want to hang out with. Loves his kids, loves his wife, works hard, frustrated by his job, and his boss. He just seems like such a everyday guy. But you have to constantly remind yourself, because it's told from that perspective, you constantly remind yourself, but what he's doing is monstrous. And he isn't putting the reflection in. And I think that that is the most terrifying aspect of the film, is how a person like Rudolf Hess can go about doing horrible things and completely let them wash over him because he's too busy with his own daily life to realize that there's actual moral implications to his actions that are horrifying. There are horrifying actions every single way. But just because of the way that they tell this story, they don't make him an other. They make him like you and me. They make him like the type of person, and I say person as in like husband and father, that in any other film you might respect. And that is so scary, because what a film like this does shows us is pulls the layer back, and I agree with you on the humanness, and makes us look underneath and say, what is a quality? What really is the quality of being a good person, a good man, a good woman? Is it just about doing your duties and go and being respectful of your boss and loving your kids? Or do we actually have responsibility to one another and the human race that we carry with us? And I think that that is so profound in this particular film that comes to the surface.
Yeah, I mean, Glazer, Jonathan Glazer, his film before this one was Under the Skin. That's a story about an alien who, comes to Earth, and clothes itself in the form of a human woman played by Scarlett Johansson. And this alien's mission, as far as we can tell, like the alien's kind of inscrutable. It is truly alien. But its mission is to essentially entrap and devour other people. And that's another film where Glazer kind of, there is kind of this distance. We never come to truly know what makes the alien in the film tick. But because of that distance, Glazer is kind of able to encourage the audience to really interrogate what it means to be human, and what if this alien is not human and acts in inhuman ways, which at times she does. There are some very disturbing moments in that film. But if that is the case, what is it about those actions that are inhuman? Like that presupposes that we do have a standard for what it means to be human, and that's invites us to live accordingly. And I think he's doing something similar with the zone of interest, where it is, you know, watching Hess, we are horrified, and he kind of wants us to contemplate, why does that horrify us? In our current day and age, what are we going to do to not just turn into another set of Rudolf Hesses who are just doing their jobs?
Yeah.
And that's a very difficult question. And that's, I mean, it's, again, it's why I think it's one of the best films of the year, is because that's an important question for us to ask in any age.
Yeah, it truly, truly is. I mean, this is, I love the word, the idea of responsibility here, because the responsibility is not just to himself and to his immediate family. He's lost the fact that there's a responsibility to the human race, that certainly this moment in World War II, but still applies today, that we all have. And we can get lost in the everyday we can get lost in the everyday and lose sight of the bigger picture. Whether it's just simply caring for one another, or whether or not our job has moral implications, you know, not to the extreme of a case like this, but maybe we have to ask those questions. You know, what is it that we are doing, and who are we working for, and what are the ramifications of that? What is my responsibility to people other than the ones that live in my four walls?
Right. And I mean, like, you know, if we want to tie it into our faith, you know, so much of Jesus' ministry on earth was devoted to making people ask those same sorts of questions. Like, the reason that he was so confrontational at times with his teaching, like, if you look lustfully at woman, gouge out your eye, isn't because he was, just wanted to, kind of goose the audience and sort of shock them. It was to make it clear, like, the stakes are high, guys. Like, you have to think about this. You can't just kind of, bumble along in your life and sort of float along, and then come to the end of your life and realize that you have, been dishonoring others, dishonoring God, dishonoring yourself, simply not because you're, a monster who takes joy in evil, but because you just couldn't be bothered to take up your cross,
yeah,
and follow Jesus. It's serious business, I guess, to live and serve God. And, Glazer doesn't put that fine of a point on it, but I think Christians who watch this movie can see a lot of the, it can recognize a lot of the emotions that the zone of interest brings up in us from just, like, reading the Sermon on the Mount and being confronted with, like, sell everything you have and give it to the poor. That's hard to do. I don't want to do that, but that's the sort of thing that Jesus wants us to think about and to grapple with. And if we aren't grappling with it at all, that's a problem.
And you know, it's interesting to dovetail on that. I gotta be careful how I say this, but it is interesting that Jesus's primary, like, the people he challenges the most in scripture are generally the church. You know, it's really easy to point to the Romans and say, they're the bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
But he points to the church and he says, hey, you know, think beyond. Think, you know, what does it mean to serve the poor? What does it mean to honor the downtrodden, to help people on a Sunday? What does it mean to do those things? Because again, in this particular way of framing it, you've got a group of people that are saying, we know that we're the good guys and they're the villains. And this is a type of film which reminds us that there's a tendency to be the villain in every one of us. And we have to care about that. We have to care about that. It is too easy for us to not care that we might be the villain in our own story, you know, or at least accept the challenge to ask the questions as to who is. I'm not making that a blanket case for every story or every person, but I'm just saying that this is a type of film that makes us look within and ask really hard questions about ourselves. It's brilliantly done. Brilliantly done. Yeah.
I couldn't put it better myself. That's exactly right.
Yeah, it truly is something remarkable. You know, honestly, Kevin, I mean, this film is great. We've had a great conversation about it. Maybe we should screen it or skip it.
Gee, I don't know.
Yeah.
Seems like we might be on the fence a little bit.
I'm not sure. Zone of Interest, screen it or skip it.
Absolutely screen it. The second that it comes to your area, screen it. It's worth watching.
Absolutely. It is definitely one of the best films of the year, if not the best film of the year, just for its sheer uniqueness and incredibly unsettling message. It's a beautifully put and powerful film.
Absolutely.
Well, Kevin, I love our conversations. I truly do. And I know we had you on for the movie moments, but can you tell us again? Tell us how we can follow your stuff.
Yeah. So I used to co-host a podcast called Seeing and Believing. The podcast ended late last year, but my co-host and I are still going. We just pivoted to print. So if your listeners want to check out our thoughts, we are over on Substack. They can go to seeingandbelieving.substack.com and subscribe for free. And they'll get a weekly newsletter every Friday, just kind of with reviews of new releases and various other film-related thoughts. So yeah, seeingandbelieving.substack.com. That's kind of where I'm living these days.
I love that. I love that. I miss the podcast, but I am a Substack subscriber and appreciate that we get to hear your thoughts that way about the films, current films. And a reminder for you at home, you can find us wherever podcasts are available. And if you go to YouTube, you can like and subscribe to us there. And of course, if you go to the podcast page at screenfish.net, which has lots of great reviews, but if you go to the podcast page, you can download Fishing for More, which is some small group questions, get you started in the conversation where you are about Zone of Interest. And so Kevin, thank you so much. I've loved our conversation. Always appreciate having you on. Hopefully you'll have you on again soon. Got to get your podcast legs back on. So,
you know, it was nice to get back in the podcasting saddle. So thanks so much for having me. It is always so much fun to come on the show and talk movies with you.
I really appreciate that. I really appreciate that. And for you at home, we started the conversation. This was Screenfish.